And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome aboard. Yes, indeed, Friday here at 77 WABC and the John Gambling Show, and that does indeed mean Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning. With a little bit of, we could describe, inclement weather.
Yes.
It was hailing when I got off the subway train, or walked over to the subway train this morning.
We will see what becomes of all of this.
Well, here's the issue. Some forecasters are saying we're going to get, 10 feet of snow. Oh, nobody's saying that. But, 1 to 3 inches of sleet. Some say 6 inches. The answer is nobody knows. If the storm goes a little bit to the west, then the warmer air comes in and we get rain. If it goes a little bit to the east, we get snow. And whatever it is, it is.
But the trucks have the chains on them. The
we
salt is ready to
plows,
go. The whole nine
on the trucks. They call them plowed up. We have all the trucks. We have salt spreaders ready to go. You can't plow until there's a couple of inches of snow. You can put down salt, but at the moment we're waiting to see, and hopefully the weather tomorrow for the parade won't be all that bad. It's not going to be warm and sunny, I think that's for sure, but it may not be really bad. In any case, the garbage trucks are out picking up the garbage, the waste today. We will make sure that the parade route, we have three snow melters over there. So if there is snow, we'll try to, rather than just push it to the side, we'll try to pick it up, run it through the snow melters, make sure that all the streets and the rest of the
those
city
are quite
are clean.
Some machines, those melters.
They are. I mean, the good news
with
it.
I've seen them actually work.
Right, two good news is with it. Three things with this storm. Number one, it may not be as bad as everybody says. Two, it is going to be warm after it, so that helps in cleaning up. And three, it's on a weekend when there's less traffic, so that while it's inconveniencing a lot of people, it's easier for the plows and everybody to clean. So we should be in great shape by Monday. But it will be what it will be. And New Yorkers will still have a good time at the parade, and I plan to go to the parade. Sadly, I've got to go to a funeral before.
Yeah, no, it's been a tragic week here in New York City.
It's been a tragic week, but it's funny. I thought about this when I was lying in bed this morning. I'm going to go to a funeral, which is as sad as anything. And I remember telling the parents of one and the mother of the other. Two auxiliary officers that their sons were shot and killed is not easy to do. It is so sad. And yet I'm going to go and do a parade afterwards and smile and wave and yell Happy St. Patrick's Day. And you have to do both. I mean,
unfortunately, and this is the cliche of cliches, but life is like that. I mean, it's got the negatives and the positives and everything in between.
Well,
and
I've told this story many times before, but the thing that struck me shortly after I became mayor, I was at St. Patrick's Church. There was a memorial service mass for the woman police officer who was killed 9/11. I remember her name, Moira Smith. Her husband, I forget his first name, was a sergeant in the police department. Big, tough guy. And he was sitting there, tears coming down his cheeks, as you would imagine, his wife. And they had a 2 or 3 year old little daughter who was running around the aisle in the middle of St. Patrick's and comes running up to him, Daddy, Daddy. And I watched his face. I was sitting just on the other side of the aisle, and it got a smile on it. And he looked at his daughter, and there was an empathy, and he joked with her. And he, it's being able to have those two emotions. He's grieving for the woman that he was married to and loved, and yet he still was able to have the empathy and the smile for the daughter that they both loved. The child's probably now, 7, 8 years old. I used to run into him every once in a while. I haven't seen him recently. But, it reminds me, you can have both emotions, and one doesn't take away from the other. And people that say we should always grieve or always be happy, I think they're wrong. You have to do both same time and know when to do one, when to do another. And you can walk out of one room into the other and have a different emotion.
Yeah, it is interesting. And those that can do what you just described seem to be the people that are most able to just live life at its fullest.
You'd think that God wants you to do that. You can't. Yeah, listen, my father, somebody once said to me, talking about good days, bad days, and I always think that tomorrow is going to be the best day of my life, and I couldn't be happier to wake up today. And they said, well, you know, do you ever have a bad day? Yeah, sure, the day my father died was a bad day. But in the context of the real world, other than that, things are, we're very lucky. We're lucky to live here in New York and in America. We're lucky that we have our health. Not everybody does. You know, you and I have jobs. Lucky, not everybody does. Families, not everybody does. Education, not everybody does.
So we do the best we can. Let me take a break here because I want to get into, obviously, some of the specifics that have taken place with the shooting of the two auxiliary police officers, the stabbing of another one, the shooting of another one. We'll get into that. But, Sue, let us take our break. And we'll... All right, we've got a Friday John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg underway here this morning. The executions of the auxiliary police officers, Nick Perchiero and Eugene Marshallik, stunning. The cold-bloodedness of this, just,
you know, what I think I will remember more than anything else is talking to the mother and sister and brother and girlfriend of one of them and the parents of the other. One was 28 years old, worked in a bookstore around the corner from my house, actually, which I just found out this morning. I was talking to somebody walking to the local diner where sometimes I have my executive dining room breakfast. And they said, you know, had I visited the bookshop around the corner? I said, no, why? Why would I go? Because that was where he worked. I didn't know that. But
the other one was 19.
The other one didn't. Yeah, it was 19, almost 20. He had... commuted an hour and a half a day to Stuyvesant because it was the best high school. They lived way out in Brooklyn or Queens, and a long commute. The great American dream for both of these families. And, you know, the young kids' lives snuffed out. And, you know, the craziness of this, of the execution of them, you know...
And it's unpreventable. I mean, you've got a crazy person with a gun.
Number one, yeah, it's unpreventable in that sense. We have too many guns on our streets. This is, let's not walk away from the fact that this guy had two illegal guns, and it's too easy to buy.
90 rounds or over
100
rounds.
Rounds of ammunition. Yeah. I mean, look, people, I keep coming back to the same thing. Law says you have a right to a gun, but you have to get permits, and that's fine. I have no problems with that. Guns don't belong on the streets of our city, and why people have permits, I don't know, but they have a right to it, and that's fine. But selling guns to criminals or to people, unlicensed guns and automatic guns, this is insanity.
I'm assuming these guns were illegal.
Oh, yeah, sure. No. At what point do we sit there and say, enough? I mean, you know, it's this craziness of an attack on the Second Amendment. It's not. It is an attack on our kids. And
I'd like to be the parent of that 19-year-old or that 28-year-old. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, your argument
I'm gonna
is
go,
sound.
Your I'm going to sound. Washington. I just, what do you got to do? You got to follow around one of these legislators and say you voted to keep to tie the police department's hands. You know, we lost two cops the other night, and you're saying, well, you know, there was a guy who the NRA drummed out because he thought that shooting prairie dogs, it wasn't sportsmanlike to use AK-47s. You should use a different, you know, single shot. And they drummed him out. He wasn't against you carrying an AK-47. He just thought that, I mean, there is just a point that we have to say enough. We can't keep losing police officers and kids. And we've got to do something. And nobody's trying to ban guns. Stop with this craziness. That's just so ridiculous an argument. If you get a license, you can have a gun. We don't give licenses to people who are criminals or people who can't qualify or people that have mental problems. You know, enough. And the lights are going off and people are calling up. Yeah, sure. You want to come with me? And you look the parents in the eye and you tell them.
Yeah. The other thing that underscores the horror and tragedy here is, and no one wants to put any degree on this, is, life is a life, but these people volunteered. They were unarmed, totally volunteer, got paid nothing for this, and they died for trying to help the rest of us.
Well, you know, one of the things I had Ed Schuyler look at, one of my deputy mayors, and we've come up, there are three or so things that we can get them, the families, some benefits. You know, police department will pay for the funerals, obviously. There's a workers' compensation benefit. There's a city award for heroic acts by non-peace officers, because technically they're not peace officers. There's a federal public safety officers benefit program, and we will do everything we can to get them all of this money. But having said that, it's just money. It doesn't bring back their lives. I mean, I almost feel so bad about thinking about the money when we should be thinking about, these are human beings who, as you point out, were trying to protect you and me on a voluntary basis, getting no compensation for it, putting their time in. And then, you know, you read people complaining about this, that, and the other thing, and I think, you know, this was the great American dream for these two kids. One was a writer, the 28-year-old. He was about to have a book published. It was his great dream. He worked hard, did everything you could ask. The other one comes from Russia, and he gets into a good public school. And, you know, I mean, just
you're really
going to NYU.
Have you talked with, obviously I know you've talked with Ray Kelly about this, but there must be somebody who is in charge of the auxiliary police. I think there's, what, 4,500 of them?
4,500, yeah.
Something like that. Is there procedures in light of this that need to be looked at?
Well, we'll look at it. I mean, in all fairness, we haven't had anybody killed, auxiliary police, since the early 90s. It's a relatively rare occurrence, although once is one time too many by a lot, and the other night defies comprehension, I guess. You know, they don't carry guns. They are dressed to look like police officers.
That was one of my questions. Should that be changed, possibly? Anyway,
well, if you change it, then they can't do their job. The idea is that they look like police officers, which will give us more presence on the streets and make the city safer.
And this Looney Tune, it wouldn't have made any difference anyway.
In this case, it wouldn't have made any difference. You know, the guy started out by murdering a guy who's going to work every day, doing what we asked him to do, set the alarm clock, punch the time clock. He worked in a pizzeria, and fired 15 times at him. So, you know, you don't have to be in uniform. That we talk about these two kids, and it's terribly tragic. That's another tragedy. That's another life. That's not a life that, you know, I think the press doesn't focus on that one because it's not as interesting, maybe, but it's a human being who was killed doing what we... You know,
by a guy with a gun who shouldn't have had a gun.
That's exactly right.
So it certainly is a tragedy. Now you said, are you going to continue to push hard in Washington? I mean, are you going to down there?
I've put a call in to the Speaker in the House, and you know, the Democrats have said repeatedly that they've blamed the Republicans for no gun legislation. Well, now they're in charge. Okay.
Stand up.
Yeah, and if not, I'm going to tell everybody. I mean, I and the other mayors, it's easy to sit around and pontificate, but, you know, day in and day out, it's our children getting killed. It's our police officers getting killed. It could be you and me getting killed. Somebody's got to stop this craziness.
Because if this guy did not have the gun in his hand, these people would not be dead. He might have had another weapon, but they probably wouldn't be dead.
If you could reduce the number of guns in the streets, you'll never get it to zero and you'll never stop murder. Keep in mind, our police department has done a spectacular job of bringing crime down, including murder in this city. The gun activists say, we'll enforce the laws. We're doing that. But one of the laws is that you don't sell to federal laws and state laws, you don't sell to criminals, and some states, they don't enforce the law.
While we're on police officers, let me just ask you real fast, the words of Charles Barron, Al Sharpton, about the Sean Bell grand jury trial, and their words, I think, have been caustic at best.
You can characterize that. My job is the following. We have a system of laws in this country, and we will, whatever the grand jury says, is justice by the definition of our laws, and I think people will act responsibly. If they indict people, some people say they didn't indict enough, and other people say they shouldn't have indicted anybody. If they don't indict anybody, then some people say that's justice, and others will say justice is not being served. Whatever the grand jury says is the laws that we will live with, and I think you'll see the people of this city behaving in an exemplary manner, understanding that. They can be disappointed. They can express themselves. That's freedom of speech. I don't have a problem with that. But nobody is going to go out and make our streets unsafe. That's the police department's job, and anybody that's worried about it can rest assured the police will be there and will ensure safety and peace on the streets of our city. And I don't even think they're going to be needed. There'll always be a hothead here or there. That's, you know, listen, that you can't have, we have that every day, so you don't have to worry about that. You know, it's unfortunately, the two cops being shot the other night come at a time. So people say, well, you know, cops have to obey the laws, and the laws are there to protect the public. And if you think that the cops are doing something wrong, that's what the Civilian Complaint Review Board is there for. And I'm beefing it up. I put more money in my budget for it. Having said that, at the same time, cops have to make life and death instantaneous decisions. And not only are their careers on the line, their lives are on the line. They're putting themselves in harm's way. So, you know, the standards for you and me may be have to be applied perhaps in a slightly different way with a tone of what does the cop do? You have a kid out there who has a toy gun in this day and age that's supposed to be painted a different color. You can buy paint, make them look like a real gun. You're a cop. Some kid pulls out a toy gun. You know, what do you do?
What do you do? I hope I never have to make that choice.
And absolutely. And what's more, you better hope that there are people who are willing to put their careers and their lives on the line and make that choice, because that's what keeps you and me safe.
You're absolutely right. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, there's more to come. We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. We'll be taking your calls. You'll have the questions, 1-800-848-WABC, in just a little bit here.
You know, before you start this thing, we talked about the two auxiliary cops.
The two other cops.
The night before, I went to one hospital where a police officer, a guy named Robert Tejeda, who was shot in the ankle. He's got a bullet. You can see the x-ray. And the doctor said to me, we're going to leave it in. He'll have trouble going through an x-ray metal detector
really,
at airports.
Really? Leave them in if they're in the bad spot?
Yeah, because it would do some more damage, and he'll be fine. You know, big strapping young guy, 7 years in the job, as I remember. And then I went to visit the next day a guy named Angel Cruz, another police officer.
He's the one who was stabbed?
Stabbed in the temple. The knife went right through the skull into his brain. The doctor, the neurologist, swears to me he's going to be fine. When I talk to him, you know, he's sort of in and out of consciousness, but there's two more could have been deaths. And then earlier in the week, we had the fire with, you know, these kids. So, you know, it's not been a great week for New York now.
Seeing as you brought up the fire, any ramifications with building inspectors and, you know, prevention in the future?
You know, you want to have smoke detectors. They had two smoke detectors in this building, no batteries in them. Daylight savings time every year, twice a year, change your batteries. That wouldn't have made any difference here. You know, the fire was discovered. They didn't close the door. Always close the door. Contains a fire, keeps it contained until hopefully the fire department can come. In this case, fire department response time was great, but took a while before somebody called. You know, and then just one of those terrible things.
Tragedy. How do you feel about reports in the papers today that Ahmad Ahmadinejad is coming to New York to address the United Nations?
The United Nations has a right to invite anybody they see fit to do, and we have, as the host city and the country, to make sure that they are provided with protection, and we will do that. I think this guy is, you know, I don't want to inflame everything, but I couldn't disagree with him more on virtually everything he's ever said, but we will fulfill our obligation in terms of providing protection. And, you know, if you want to have the UN here, and I think it should be here, if it's like freedom of speech. You can't censure people if you don't, you know, as other people would have, you know, walked in and thrown them out and ripped up this and ripped up that. I think that just gives these people the kind of publicity they want. The worst thing that can happen to them is if you just provide protection, let them come and go, come in and let them leave.
Like Hugo
Nobody
Chavez, when he came.
Right. I know it's good theater to stand up and yell and scream about them, but that's what they want you to do. Why help them? That is exactly what you're doing, help them. The worst thing you can do to them is don't say anything.
All right. St. Patrick's Day Parade, we've already talked about that, scheduled for tomorrow. The controversy with the police, the fire department?
Well, there's two controversies. Actually, there's three now. There was the first one with the parade organizers don't let groups, gay groups, march as a group. I think that's wrong. I don't think on the city streets people should be, we should have parades, but they have a legal right to do it. We've been litigated and we can't do anything, so if that's fine. That's what it is, even if I disagree with it. Then they move the firefighters back. Then they move the EMS workers saying, oh, they're part of the fire department, which they are, and they have, but they have their own pipe and drum band. No, you can only have one from the fire department. I mean, I guess my advice to the guy running the parade is, look, nothing's perfect. Lighten up. You have rules. Rules are there to be guidelines. Don't enforce them at this level. And particularly, you know, he says, oh, the fire department's an entity to its own. They're our bravest. They protect us. And
it's getting ugly now with accusations.
Why diss them? I can't understand why the guy's doing it.
Accusations of alcohol and...
But there's no we really do a great job in this day and age of preventing drinking on the streets, and you know I'm sure there's somebody that drinks, but fine. Personally, I think he couldn't be more wrong, and I can tell you what I'm going to do. I've got a funeral tomorrow. I'm going to have a breakfast traditionally at Gracie Mansion for the Irish community. And then I usually go to St. Patrick's for their Mass. All Jewish boys go to St. Patrick's for Easter and Christmas and St. Patrick's Day. But this year I will unfortunately skip the St. Patrick's Mass and instead go to the funeral for one of the two auxiliary cops. And then when that is done, I will go and march in the parade. And I will march a few blocks with police, a few blocks with sanitation, a few blocks with corrections, and then try to march as much as I can with the fire department to stand up for them. You know, usually I march with the police department the whole way. This time I'll try to march with the fire department as much of the whole way as I can.
All right. Earlier this week, there were pictures in the newspaper of parents that were tented out, camping out on the streets of New York City to see if they could get their children into pre-K. That seems unconscionable.
I don't know if it's unconscionable. It seems ridiculous.
Well, call it what you will. It just seems ridiculous that parents would have to do that to put their kids in school.
Well, they don't have to. There may be other pre-K programs. But, you know, if everybody wants the same program, then you got to have some method of picking them. A lot of these schools are private schools. Virtually
well, these were the publics that waiting to get into the public school program.
It's all, you know, we have...
You think pre-K is good, though. It should be universal?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm talking about public school.
The statistics that the professional educators make a very compelling case that the earlier you start formal education, in this case pre-K, the better the results are as they go through more higher grades in terms of their learning experience. And universal pre-K, which means public schools for those, you know, private schools you want to go to them if you can afford it, that those are great investments of the public's dollars in the future of this city and this country.
Your reaction to your controller's words about the school system here in New York City, which you are the head of, he said it has a culture of corporate backroom spending free-for-alls.
Maybe that's the same policy I should adopt as with the UN visitors. Look, I don't know where some of that comes from. He ran the Board of Ed back in the old days and probably tried to do the best job. I wasn't au courant then. We're trying to do the best job we can. We need everybody to pull together and find what things are good and emphasize those. And when we find something that isn't working, change it for the better. Don't castigate people for trying things. You'll never get good people coming to work for you if when somebody tries something and it doesn't work, you dump on them, and when they and you'll never get somebody good to come to work for you when it does work if you don't give them credit for it. And we should all be pulling together here rather than trying to tear us apart. That's what leadership's all about.
Two things about the West Side before we take a break, then we'll go to the telephones. 1-800-848-WABC. The governor and the Javits Center, is there a problem?
No, I think so. Spitzer comes in, new governor, wants to see what this is. Fundamentally a state project, a state and city project, but the state owns the land and state agency. Wants to get up to speed, wants to look and see if there are new things, better things we can do. Had a good meeting with him and his people, and you know, if we come up with a handful of tweaks that are better, that's fine. Keep in mind, we unfortunately are not going to have the kind of convention center that that Chicago has. I mean, you can go by, drive in from the airport in Chicago, you go by the McCormick Center, you could put the Javits Center inside the McCormick
you
Center.
You go by the McCormick Center, then you go by the McCormick
right,
Center, then
right.
You go by
you
it
put the
again.
Javits Center inside, and they can still have conventions. We don't, and we desperately, we had an opportunity to have a world-class convention center, and it just didn't work out. That was using, somebody wanted to use, to rent, to help us build a big part of the convention center and rent it for 11 Sundays to let somebody joke, men in tight pants throw a ball around. It didn't work out. Okay, let's get on with it. But that was our opportunity to have something that size. And other than that, now there's no longer the opportunity. Nobody would pay for something. That expansion wouldn't have the money. And we don't have the space for it anymore. So we should do the best job we can. And we'll work with Elliot. And I think that maybe it's because, you know, there's a handful of things we probably can do better. And that's great. That's, you know, exactly what we should be doing.
MTA says on the expansion of the number 7 line, we're not going to go there unless the city guarantees overruns.
We'll work with the MTA. I think that'll be fine. Keep in mind, the MTA should be building the subway line.
Not the city.
Not the city. I mean, they're sitting there yelling at us because we're stepping up. The New York City taxpayer is stepping up and doing what the MTA should be doing. You know, you can't write this stuff. You got to tear your hair out and say, what did I miss here? But the bottom line is they've got a new guy running the MTA. I think he's very good, Lee Sanderson. He's very creative, and I think working with them, we'll find ways to make this thing work. And if we can get that subway line going, it'll be in a new – after that, the private sector will take care of all of this. You won't be able to stop it. The whole West Side, it'll be one of the bigger things that this administration has done to open up the whole West Side. And it's nobody's going to build or go where there isn't mass transit. If you look at a map, a whole big chunk of Manhattan doesn't have mass transit. Now, we should have mass transit on Staten Island and Queens and in Brooklyn the further you go away. But, you know, that just – there's no money for that.
Someday.
The payback here is you – and the way we're financing this is people are buying bonds or it's lending us money to build the subway, and how they're going to get paid back? They're going to get paid back with the new tax revenues that we will get from new buildings and commercial activity over there.
All right, let's take our break. Then to you on the phones, you'll be next with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Bloomberg, it's your turn to ask the questions. Mr. Mayor, let's go to Daniel out in Staten Island. Daniel, make it quick. Go.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Mayor. Councilman Charles Barron had some inflammatory remarks that have me concerned in reference to the tragedy of Sean Bell. How will you address that to tone his outrageous statements down? Because as a citizen of New York, I'm very concerned.
Well, you can be concerned, and he has a right to say what he wants to say. I don't agree with Charles Barron on any of this stuff, but I can just tell you, I think most people will, virtually everybody, will behave in the manner you would expect them to as Americans. People have a right to say crazy things, but we're all going to work together here and make sure the streets are safe. And for the handful of hotheads who get carried away, we've got the world's best police department that's going to make sure that we keep the peace. And, you know, there's no ways to have freedom of speech and stop somebody from saying something you don't like. You can't have it both ways. Fortunately, the good news is, Daniel, I don't think anybody listens to him. And if we try to go after him, you give him that audience that he wants. The best way of just ignore the guy. It's the worst thing you can do to him. It's worse than anything else. Ignore him. He wants you to yell and scream.
All right. Thank you, Daniel. Let's go to Joanne in New York. Hello, Joanne. Your question quickly, please.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. Mayor Bloomberg, I'd like to ask a question. I live in Rockaway Beach, New York. I'm a retired police officer. Served the city for New York for 23 years. I'd like to know why the people in Rockaway Beach have to listen to shots fired every night from these Hamel House projects. I mean, it's absolutely disgraceful.
I don't know, Joanne. I'll take a look and talk to the police commissioner. We're trying to work very hard on all of the NYCHA housing and make it safe. And we'll do that. It shouldn't happen. You want to go to John in Brooklyn?
John in Brooklyn was a question I was going to ask. Go ahead, John, real fast.
Yeah, Bloomberg, you amaze me, and I congratulate you. You took a rubber stamp process, and you didn't sign the pedicab bill. You're actually going to revise it? My hat's off to you.
Well, I haven't decided what I'm going to do, John. I think I'm sympathetic to people who want to work. I'm sympathetic to pedicabs. People seem to like them. It's part of New York. I'm also sympathetic to the fact that whether we like it or not, everybody's not going to ride bicycles. We have a lot of traffic, and it's sort of a mismatch, a car and pedicab. And people who have bicycles don't like pedicabs in bicycle lanes. People that drive don't like pedicabs in the streets. But I want to look and see what I think is a good compromise. And then I've got to get the city council to go along with it. So
is it a compromise putting them in certain parts of the city?
Well, you know, the capitalism does that. You want to put them where people want to be and want to use them. On the other hand, we have too much traffic. People say, let's make everybody ride bicycles only. That's not, it may be a great idea, but it's not going to happen. Right, okay, so it's not going to happen. So, you know, we've got to find some balance. The pedicab people make a good case that they want to work and you're taking away their jobs. Okay, but everybody, you can't, okay, they can't afford insurance, but there is the argument they should have insurance. They want to be every place. The bridges have enough traffic already. So I don't know what the right answer is, but I listened to these, we have these hearings, and I listened, and I thought, I'm not comfortable with my own decision in my mind yet. I'm going to look at it, and I have a few more days to do so.
March, well, see you Friday.
Thank you.